Okay, we'll go ahead on and get started. This session is about foreclosures. What they do to us, how they came about with it. Right. There is no heart in this commerce game that they play with us. Normally what I do, we just jump right up on into it, what we're just going to speak about. But I'm going to have Gene come up.
Can everybody hear me? Okay. Those two individuals there, the reason you're not winning in court, I'm going to tell you why you're not winning in court. They're privately owned trading companies using private copyrighted law. Titles 1 through 50 are owned by West Publishing Company, Nina Hant, and American Law Institutes. American Law Institutes is located in Pennsylvania. Nina Hamster holds all of the copyrights to American Law Institutes. That's the Uniform Commercial Code, which you are using in all these foreclosures, Restatement of the Law, First, Second, and Third Series, Torts, Contracts, and Trusts. I have all of them. I have my own law library. As you probably can tell. That's all I do is read. I have Bogart on Trust, which is about 35 volume. I have Benedict on Admiralty, which is a 35 volume set. I bought them all with promissory notes, which you didn't have to do, which you don't have to do. But these two individuals here own the copyrights. That's what the bar license is, because the courts are privately owned trading companies. They're registered with CCR, which is Contractor Central Registration, under the Defense Logistics Information Service. The DLIS is under the DOD, the Department of Defense. They issue the CAGE code, commercial and government entity. The CAGE code corresponds to their bank account. Tony's exactly right. What they do when you go into court, they issue a bid bond, financing the entire operation. What you're doing is you're acting as surety and underwriter. And we sued the judge in Admiralty. They wouldn't serve the complaint. Okay, that's why you have to have an attorney to go into court. That's why attorneys have a bar license. Because all the laws are copyrighted. They're private copyrighted law. West Publishing owns every major newspaper in the United States, including USA. Does that tell you anything? They're headquartered, they have a corporate office in Edinburgh, Canada, Edmonton, Canada, and they have a corporate office in London, England, Essex County, London, England. I know all their corporate executives. I buy my books from them. And I use promissory notes to buy the books, and they give me a receipt for the books every time I buy one. But you got to know how to do it. But they own, the courts are using private copyrighted law. And you can't use their law unless you get permission from them. Ann Bernard holds it. Go up on the internet and call her. They got her number up there. You could email. She's in Minnesota, and Nina Hamster's in Pennsylvania. If you can afford it, you need to get a set of restatement on the law on restitution. This book was printed in, it's a single volume. It hasn't been changed since 1938. That's because in 200 pages of the book is on constructive trust and equity. Restitution. It's printed under Restatement of the Law on Restitution by American Law Institutes. They're in Pennsylvania. I have the book. It hasn't been changed since 1938. That's almost 70 years ago. And the reason it hasn't changed is because constructive trust and equity hasn't changed. Every time you go into court, the judge is doing a constructive trust and equity. What I do is I do a constructive trust in common law. I go in there and put the judge under trust. And I use the Uniform Trust Code. I had judges in California, they ran out of the courtroom. You ever seen a judge run down the street? It's really funny. But you have to have permission to use their law because it's private, copyrighted law. It's not public law. The courts are privately owned. The United States Attorney's Executive, this is not my opinion. I've got all the documentation. I put this into a court, and the U.S. attorney read it, and he took it to the judge, and he said, if we put this into the court record, it'd collapse the entire court system. So Carl wouldn't file it. He said, where'd you get this information from? I got it from Gene Keating. It's really funny, because they know who I am. But this is what's going on. Everything is private. The prison system is privately owned. Payne Weber Group, which is Walmart, Kmart, USPS, the United Postal Service owns part of the prison systems. The BATF, the Internal Revenue Service, owns part of the prison systems. All of this is in my treatise. If you get my treatise, it's all in there. It's 800 pages. You're going to be flabbergasted at some of the stuff in there. Payne Weber, there's 10,000 corporations in the Payne Weber Group. They own all of the stock in the prison system, and they just merged in 2002 with BIS, Bank of International Settlements in Zurich, Switzerland, and UBS of Switzerland. They just passed Basel I and Basel II. They're the G7 and the G8, which is a part of Japan, China. China is going to come in here and take everything because they own the United States. That's where all your gold went in 33. They sold $11 billion. I have one of the original gold bonds, $500 million plus the coupons. They sold them to the Taiwan Bank in China in 1933. That's why I put a lien on the China Bank in Los Angeles, agricultural lien. Because they took all my gold and gave it to China, sold it to China. Now I have a product contract lien. China owns, they're the wealthiest country in the world right now. China, Japan, Russia, and Israel. Israel runs your government, not the other way around. You don't even have a government. You haven't had a government in this country in 300 years. Anybody think that the Constitution wasn't written for the people? It was written, it's a express trust. United States and the Crown and the Vatican and the Jesuits are the beneficiaries of the trust, not you. If you read Supreme Court decisions, you'll find out the Constitution, the states gave up all their sovereignty. That's why the Civil War was fought over the Constitution, because the states surrendered all of their sovereignty under the Constitution. If you don't believe me, go into Black's Law Dictionary and look up interposition, the doctrine of interposition. Prior to the ratification and adoption of the Constitution, the states had interposition. That's the doctrine that the states, in their sovereign capacity, could refuse to obey any remonstrance or order from the federal government. If you look up the etymology of the word federal, it comes from fede, F-E-D-E, federalism, which is feudalism. F-E-D-E, go into Etymology Dictionary on the internet and look up the word feud. It'll give you food, fide, fee, Feud, F-E-U-D, fide, which is F-E-D, that's the suffix, and then you got the prefix, fide, and then you got the suffix, raw. Fede raw. Fede is the same word as feud. Just put feud in there and you got fed feudal. Feudalism. Is there anybody that doubts what do you think the word landlord and tenant came from? How you hold your estate determines your status in society. And 90% of the people in this room, because they give everything away, hold their property or their estate in periodic tenancy. That's why you're a tenant or a serf on the land. That's why you never have a lodeal title, because you give everything away. If you don't believe me, go read 2512B of Title 26. It says, in a monetary transaction where the value of the property exceeds the consideration given, it shall constitute a donation or a gift. What did you give them? You gave them the value. The mortgage on the mortgage note represents the value, the market value of the property. So you gave them, let's say, $250,000, and they gave you absolutely nothing for it. So you made a $250,000 donation. That's why everything is a Class 5 gift and estate tax, because there is no money. The Human Capital Fund, which the Internal Revenue Service runs the Human Capital Fund, which is a part of the Department of Treasury. If you go in there, you'll find out that the Gift and Estate Tax Adjustment Act of 1970 was passed in 1970. That's what this trust fund is, Human Capital Trust Fund. You're providing human capital. You're the goods or the movables, which are defined in 9-102. Goods are farm products. Farm products are cattle, livestock, chattel, collateral, proceeds. I listed all of them. That's why I put an ag lien on them. I said, if you want me to give you all the product and goods, I'm going to put a lien on you, product contract lien, which is what the birth application is. It's a product contract lien. And under state, that's why in 2001, the Agricultural Task Force Committee revised Article 9 and brought the agricultural lien in as a lien interest, not a security interest. The ag lien trumps any security interest. That's why they can't foreclose on farmers. Most farmers are totally unaware of this. Once you put that ag lien on, it's indelible. It gives you execution of payment and performance on the contract. What's the contract? The birth application is a contract. It's a product contract lien. Gives you the right to execution of payment. As soon as you perfect it by putting it on a UCC-1 and filing it with the Secretary of State, you now have a perfected lien interest, and it's automatically in default as soon as it's perfected. Go read 9-606. 9-607. 606 says it creates a default judgment. 607 says it can be executed on by foreclosure. You can foreclose on them. What do you think they buried all this stuff under Title 7? Everybody's reading Title 26 and all these. Well, Title 26 reinforces Title 7. Why do you think they passed the Agricultural Adjustment Act under Public Law 7310 in May 12, 1933, under the FERA, Federal Emergency Relief Act, under the Tennessee Valley Authority? This is all a parcel and part of that. That's why everything is under the Department of Agriculture. They even have a livestock protection plan. Go read Title 7, Section 1501. That's the Federal Crop Insurance Act. Then they did a pilot program under Section 1523 of Title 7 and set up a risk management agency in all of the counties, in every county in every state. That's what that 177-page document that's on the Department of Agriculture website. All you have to do is type in livestock protection plan for counties into the search engine. It'll bring it up. Let me tell you another one. This is going to snap your garter belts. In God we trust. You know what that said originally? In gold we trust. It's on every dollar bill. Did you know that In God We Trust is a perpetual trust fund under the Department of Agriculture? I've got a list of all the beneficiaries on the Department of Agriculture website. Every state, every motor vehicle department of every state is issuing license plates with In God We Trust on the license plate. And all of the revenue that they collect for the payment of the license plates goes into this In God We Trust trust fund. How many people are aware of that? Like it says in the scriptures, while you were sleeping, the thieves came in here and stole you. They're selling you globally. They're selling you all over the world. Why do you think they call the United States the great whore of Babylon? Believe me, when Yahweh gets through with these people, there isn't going to be anything left. They're going to all be gone. You need to study the theology of this and get it. The churches aren't teaching this. That's why nobody knows what's going on. You got the blind leading the blind. Everybody's listening to what other people are telling them. The truth is self-evident. It doesn't have to be proven. Is there anybody that doubts what I'm teaching you here is the truth? It's self-evident. I don't need to prove it. These foreclosures they don't even have the note. They sold the note at closing. What you should do if you're going to do a mortgage is you should walk out, and I was told this by a federal judge, you should give them the note and walk out with the deed of trust. Keep the deed of trust and give them the note. You're giving it all away. And then people sit around and complain about it. I said, why don't you read the documents before you sign them? They're telling you exactly what you. I hereby transfer all right, title, and interest in the below described property to the lender. What does that sound like to you? Sounds like an alienation to me. Let me ask you a question. It says in the security agreement that you're lawfully a borrower covenants that he is lawfully sized. How many people know what S-E-I-S-E-D means? That the borrower is lawfully sized of the below described property. It says that right in your security agreement. If you own, we're litigating this right now. I said, if we own the property, how can there be a mortgage loan on it? You mean I took out a mortgage loan to buy property that I already own? I said, get real. That's one of the reasons there's no contract between the borrower and the lender. Why the attorneys come in there as a substitute, it's more like a prostitute. That's why they can't foreclose under Rule 17A or dismiss it for failure of the real party in interest because of no ratification of commencement if the real party hasn't made an interest until there's time to do a substitution and joinder. So if you don't raise the issue, what they do is substitutes the attorneys for the real party in interest. Then they join them. Now they're taking the place of the real parties in interest. If you read these S3 registration statements, which you can download off the internet, they tell you who the players are. They'll tell you who the loan seller is. They'll tell you who the depositor is. A lot of them contain a pooling and servicing agreement. The pooling and servicing agreement says in 99.9% of the cases that the pooling and servicing company has sold all right, title, and interest to the trust fund. The trust owns all the loans. That's where they create the mortgage-backed securities and sell cash flow claims to the beneficial interest holders as bondholders. That's where all your payments are going. If you doubt that that is true, go up on PIMCO Bonds website, P-I-M-C-O, which is owned by Allianz, largest bond seller in the world. I told this judge, I said, what do you think they're doing, lying to me? This is all going on behind the scenes while you're signing your fanny away. You sold the farm. What do you think the word farm means? You ever heard the expression, he sold the farm? That's what you're doing. You've given up everything. You gave it away. You should get a copy of the book, The Complete Book of Wills, Estates, and Trusts by Alexander Bove, B-O-V-E. I called him up and I asked him, I said, I have a question regarding gift and estate taxes. He says, where are you located? I said, in Ohio. He says, I know the best attorney in the United States on gift and estate taxes. I said, well, what's his name? He says, Phil Lilly. So he gave me his number and I called him up. I said, I want to make an appointment. I have a question about gift and estate taxes. I said, I made a contribution or donation to the county, and I want to know what the tax liability is on the gift. I didn't tell him it was a mortgage loan. I made that mistake once. I don't make the same mistake twice. So I went in there, and I talked to him for 4.5 hours. He's the one that told me, you're scaring the SHIT out of me, after I finished, because he knew that I understood what was going on. Everything is a donation. That's why everything is a gift and estate tax. A gift and estate tax is the tax on the right to transfer property. It's an excise tax, not an income tax. That's why if you do what Tony says, you put a Red Fox stamp on the docket sheet. Where did the word docket come from? It came from the word dock. What's listed on, I'll tell you another thing that most people don't know. The docket sheet is in the state courts, it's in the state archives, not in the courthouse. Ask Jack. I don't know if Jack's here or not. He's still here. He'd be here tomorrow, but he went down to the federal courts, district courts, have a federal archives. That's where the original docket sheet is, not in the clerk's office. If you put a Red Fox stamp on that and sign payment in full for the capital transfer tax under 3-311 of the Uniform Commercial Code as accord and satisfaction. When you do that, you've paid the capital transfer tax on the goods and products listed on the docket sheet, so therefore you're entitled to delivery of the goods that's listed on the docket sheet. Get a Red Fox stamp, put it up in the bottom right-hand corner. And Tony says, do it on the back, too. You do it on the back, too? Do it on the back. And the reason for that, you got to do these things in red ink. I'll tell you a little secret that very few people know about. Last in time is first in line. When you sign documents, do not sign your signature in front of the notary. Do it after the notary. And sign it in red ink. You turn it over and do it on the bottom right-hand corner on the back of the last page. This is the way they used to do things in ancient times. And they used to do it, the red ink represents blood. We do a thumbprint, red thumbprint, and then we sign it in red ink. Last signature on the page. Not the first, the last, because in bankruptcy, last in time is first in line. If you sign it before the notary, they won't even see your signature. Do it on anything. UCC-1, everybody's doing everything wrong. I'm surprised they get any kind of a remedy. Of course, they don't exactly tell you what's going on either. That's how they control people. You control the knowledge, you control the people. You canceled the stamp by signing your signature through the stamp. Accord and satisfaction. You sign your name and say payment in full for the capital transfer tax as accord and satisfaction under 3-311 of the Uniform Commercial Code. That's what it is. When they accept that, now you're entitled to delivery of the goods. You can do a habeas corpus on the goods. Yes. I would do it at a 45-degree angle, yeah. But do it in red ink. The judge knows all this stuff.
You don't have to put a 45-degree line to it because it doesn't have a box? Or do you have to put a line to it?
Well, no, you don't have to do a line. Just sign it. Sign your signature through the stamp. Yeah, that cancels the stamp. Yeah, why don't you get, if you got a microphone?
I don't want to take yours. You're holding it. You have to use the mic. It'll be useless.
Do you have to put a red fox stamp on the top right-hand corner of the first page and also on the bottom right-hand corner of the last page?
I would do it, yes. Yes. That's real money. You know what U.S. means? Unit of silver. That's what the dollar sign is. The dollar is a legal fiction today. The dollar doesn't even exist. It's a confidence game. They say that modern money mechanics and Federal Reserve purposes and functions. Intrinsically, a dollar bill is just a piece of paper. What then it makes it acceptable in exchange for services and goods is the confidence that people have that they'll be able to go out and get something with it. Confidence game. Any questions regarding mortgages? What you did, if you go into the May 3rd, 1933 congressional record, it says that they mortgaged all the property of the United States for the collateral for the public and national debt. That makes you the creditor in fact. You got to start assuming you live in a system where you either learn responsibility or you're going to be eaten alive. You got to start assuming responsibility for yourself. Why do you think I'm doing? I graduated summa cum laude from Hastings School of Law. I know more about law than 99.9% of the judges and lawyers. I could be making millions of dollars doing it with a law practice, scamming people like they're doing. The judge went down. I was in jail because I beat two cops up. The judge came down to the jail and told me, he says, I want you in my courtroom. He wanted me to take the bar and become a member of the court. I said, I'm not going to do it. This is all about commercial. These are all commercial entities. What they've done is turned the United States into a commercial enterprise, which you call, that's why the Uniform Commercial Code governs all commercial transactions. You need to read the Uniform Commercial Code. You need to study trust law. Get Restatement of the Law on Trust is a two-volume set. Get it and read it, and you get it from American Law Institutes. And you need to get a clerk's praxis or the law and praxis of admiralty by John E. Hall. That will tell you in there, it'll tell you that the commissioners are the Lord High Admiral. That's where your admiralty went. In the commissioner's court at the county level. All these commissioners are high admiralty officers. What they did is they just changed the name. They're all civil commissioners. Go to any county in the United States, and every one of them has a commissioner's court. And they have an office of commissioners. They're the ones that run the entire county. If you don't start assuming responsibility for what's going on, you're never going to be free. Now, I'm telling you that under divine law. Yahweh wants you to start assuming God helps those who help themselves. If you're sitting around waiting for somebody else to do it, it is never going to happen. Why do you think I'm doing what I'm doing? But I enjoy this because people need help, so I help them.
Now, he gave you a lot to look up, which is excellent, because we need that. It's time you need to take the time to study, grab those books that he was speaking about, and take the time to read about those things. It'll show you how you got where you are. And you notice he always takes you through all of the acts and bring you all the way up. So he's taking you all the way back from 1861 and so forth and bringing you all the way up to where you are at today, to why you have the ability to utilize these forms that you're using. Now, we know that this is the crux of the matter. When you look at a thing, you look at the big picture. You know, the big picture is, I just want my mortgage eliminated, and that would be good enough for me. For a lot of individuals, they say, well, what would be the cause and the reason and the rhyme for everything? Well, that is just simply this. To understanding what is really going on in the world, which also gives you the ability and the power and the authority without fail and without having a sorrowful heart when you do what you do, when you go into them and you usher in Section 27, things like that, and you start collecting double when you think you didn't deserve it, but you didn't know that you really were supposed to get 10 times as much. So what you're doing, you're really not double dipping or anything that individual stipulate, because you still haven't gotten back everything that you had coming. Okay? With that in mind, you take and listen to what Gene was saying, and you get to understand why. And that's a good thing to know. Here we're dealing with the 28. Punch up the 28. Let's finish the 28. Have a seat just for a little bit, and we will take your questions. We're going to finish the 28 and go into the 91. This way you understand why you're doing what you're doing, what gives you the power and authority. Then we'll accept your questions and show you what you can do in lieu of your mortgage. Now, earlier today, we went over to the affidavits 28, and we stopped at 7B, really. We got through 7A. I'm going to breeze through this for you real quick simply because we've done that. And you'll notice, you know what goes there, state of, county of. That will be for the notary that you're dealing with, okay? And in that particular town where this incident is taking place, that will be the state of. If it's Florida, you know what you put in there, and then the county, depending on what county you are in. SS, leave it blank. Then right here, you know that's the straw man. Two, you know that's your BC. A lot of individuals were not utilizing the BC, but utilizing the number, street, city, state, zip code. But the true thing that should go in there, you could do that, but the most proper thing would be to utilize the birth certificate number, because it does have a location as well. And that's why those numbers are there. The first three represent the state, second represents the individual's birth, and the third represents the filing number of where the individual is located. That's why when you get down to three, the type and duration of occupation, you see, you know that you are a surety, and you know now the duration is for a lifetime. That goes in conjunction with the BC, you see. That's why you put in that there. Line four, you have name and address of employer, and that will be whatever the situation might be. Whomever the mortgage company is that you're dealing with, that will go in box four, okay? You will put the name of that particular individual company, and you will also list their address underneath it, okay? You already know that you're not self-employed. You were if you were dealing with yourself, okay? Now, line five, name and address of individual surety broker used, if any. And you know that it's always one that's used. You know it's always the DTC. You know the address, 55 Water Street, New York, New York, 10041. Number line six is the telephone number. Leave it blank simply because you do not wish to go in commerce with them about the documentation in which you're putting in. Line seven, you know these are some of the things that you utilize when you're dealing with the mortgage. They gave you those things in an outline of real estate, okay? Including legal description. And that's only if you're doing a 90. In which when we started taking the questions, some individuals might have already lost their property. And since you've already lost your property, you have to do a 90 to regain your property. You have 3 years to get your home back, even if it's already been taken away. Now, remember this. In some incidences, even though we stipulate you have 3 years to retain your property if it's already gone, some individuals will go off and do a 90. A land patent could be done at any time for any reason. Now, I'm not here to tell you to do this to anyone. You can go rent a property from someone. Simply because you have some interest in the property, you could do a land patent on the property that you're renting or the property that you have done a what's the terminology they're using now? People rent to own or a land contract. If you do, yeah, options to buy, you could do a land patent on that property and take the whole neighborhood simply because now you have interest in the property. We don't want to show you those things, really tell you those things, but I can't do nothing but tell you those things because they are there and they are necessary to know, but we don't want you to actually carry those things out. Then have the individual companies paying you taxes on the whole land because there was over 100 houses on that particular farm. When you took the little plaque, you got the farm. Then you went about and had the county tax department paying you. After they take 10% out, they send all the rest of the currency from all of the people in the neighborhood and abroad taxes because you did a land patent on your property and took the whole neighborhood. That's how that goes. Unfortunately, there's nothing we could do about it. But what you could do about it is if you did a land patent on your property, you could stipulate only if and that you just only want the property that you are stipulating, thereby leaving all the other individuals around you free to continue to pay taxes to the Department of Taxation. And then they have to deal only with them only. Now, in some cases, depending on where you are dwelling and what you are doing, you can go ahead and do a land patent, take the whole thing, free everyone up from their taxes, and then you have no problem with that either if you tell them that, and they'd probably be happy too. Okay, now, let's move on. That's some of the things that you're putting under the description of the land when you do a land patent and go against and get a lodeal title and doing a land grant. Okay, now you know that we spoke about having the market value of the property. That would be fine if you just go to the county and get a county appraisal. They've already done the job. Okay? Also, you're going to put C attachment, C optional form 91. And if you do the land patent because you've already lost the property, C optional form 90. On line B, assets other than real estate. Describe the assets. The details of the escrow account. You see how it's an escrow account? And attach certified evidence thereof. Now, what's taking place on line B? It's just even more so what took place on line A. Line A stipulated the first mortgage. Line B stipulates if there's a second mortgage on the on this individual property. You might have a second or third mortgage or some other thing that's going on with the case. Okay? So thereby, you'll put that on line B. Okay? And if there's nothing, don't put it. And now, since, remember, I've talked about they lowered the time of the forms, do not put on there the second mortgage. Take the opportunity to use another affidavit and then put the second mortgage on the other affidavit that buys you more time. Okay? So keep that in mind when you're doing that. Okay? I'll explain that again. If you had a second mortgage that you wanted to also list in the records, and you also wanted to eliminate the second mortgage along with the first mortgage, do not put the second mortgage on the same dock because you only got 25 minutes. Put the second mortgage on its own paperwork, on a separate documentation, okay, that buys you more time with your documentation. If it's the same bank, still put it on a separate doc. Only reason for that is because, remember, you only have 25 minutes on the documentation. That's the only reason why. Other than that, if you choose to put it on the same doc, you can, but you're only going to have 25 minutes to have that work with. Okay? Now, that will deal with line B. Line 8, okay, it says identify all mortgages in which you've already done that. So really line 8 is just nothing more than line 7A and line 7B. The only difference is with lines 8 is that you're also going to include real estate taxes due. Okay? That's the only difference on line 8. And you're going to include the taxes due and payable. Okay? If they're paid for 7 years and you put that, you just ended the case. You see how many different times you got the opportunity to just take this case out? Just like being a master of martial arts, you know every blow count. But you're getting them going out and you're getting them coming back. So you got many, several opportunities to end the case on each one of these lines. They're all detrimental, okay? So make sure that you take the opportunity to utilize that. Line 9, identify all bonds, including bid guarantees, for which these subject assets have been pledged within 3 years. Now, you know what's being pledged within the 3 years is what? You are pledging against this mortgage, okay? Simply because they put it in the court, they are pledging against it at that particular time. So, again, you're looking at line 7A and line 7B that's being pledged within 3 years. Okay, then you go, scroll down, please. You go to 10. 10 would be signed again in front of a notary, okay? And then 11, it's going to state bonds and contracts to which this affidavit relate. Now, what is it relating to? This affidavit is relating to what bond? Optional form 91. And optional form 90. Those are bonds. You see? It's relating to those bonds. And if there was any other situation that you were dealing with this form, such as the standard form 24, standard form 25, standard form 25A, it's relating to those bonds. So on line 11, you will put the bonds in that particular location. Okay? Now, here you have date oath administrator. Now, you know what that is. This is done in front of who? Notary. That's where the notary handles this particular documentation. You take it to them, they know what to do with it. That's Form 28. Authorized for local reproduction. Do not change the format. Do not cross things out, as we stipulated above. When they asked, were you a United States citizen, and you gave them the authority to make you also the surety upon the documentation. And the 28 gave you that power and gave you the ability to be just that. Now you're going to understand when we go to optional form 91. Can we go to that real quick? 11 will just, in that box, you're going to put SF 24, SF 25, SF 25A, that's a bid bond, performance bond, a payment bond. But it's okay to put the numbers in there, they know what they are. And then you'll put OPT, which you see the way I wrote it on the board, OPT 91 and OPT 90. That's fine. In those boxes, it will get the job done. OPT is optional. That's abbreviated for optional. Okay. Now, here you have release of personal property from escrow. This form here is the form in which you're going to utilize in your mortgage. Release of personal property from escrow. You'll notice they have this form divided into two parts. You see that? You see whereas above? See that? Now, you see here it says whereas I. So you got whereas and whereas I. That's the separation of these two forms. One will be dealing with the living man, and the other will be dealing with who? The straw man. The top portion is dealing with the straw man. The bottom portion is dealing with who? The living man. Living man always come second or come underneath simply because he's always the underwriter. The individual at the top is the straw man, which is the surety, which is the government contracting agent, you see, which is the only one that can warranty and be a warrantying officer simply because it's the only one that can operate in commerce under credit. Okay? So thereby, you see, whereas it goes to the straw man, and you have the name of the straw man of. And now line two, always remember this. You'll notice on every documentation, line two always deal with the birth certificate. Line two only always deal with the birth certificate. If nothing else, if you got your eyes closed, they say, well, go on line two, BC. It's just that simple. See, you don't even have to guess or speculate about it. They say, well, I put all these. You say, no, BC, period. You see? And that keeps the form simple. Now, in some cases, you could put place of residency if you choose to. For some individuals who are not born here and they want to wonder, should I, shouldn't I, could I, can I? It's okay to put the residence that's in question in some cases. It's not harmful. But you, for the most part, want to utilize the BC. Because it has the power, the ability, and the authority to move things. That's why it stipulates the place of residency, BC, and it goes to say buy a bond. Because now you come to find out the BC is a bond. You see that? And off of the bond, what I said was created 14 days later? Social Security number. So it has to say buy a bond for the performance of U.S. government contract number. And then the Social Security number had to follow the birth certificate number. You see what took place? So now you put your Social Security number on line three. It has to come after the BC. So then it says, became a surety for the complete and successful performance of the said contract. And whereas said surety has placed certain personal property where? In escrow. Now you have to listen to that terminology. Who placed it in escrow? You did. I say that again. You did. No one else did. But you have to realize that if you placed it in there, who has to get it out? You. That's correct. No one else can get it out but you. in account number, and thereby, now you see why you're dealing with the account number. See? Now, that's where you'll put the mortgage account number or whatever account number that you have, depending on the case and the situation that it might be. But since we're dealing with mortgages, we know the account number of the mortgage account goes in there. On deposit, at, and then the name of the financial institution, which will be the mortgage company that you're dealing with, goes on that line. See? And at located at, you'll put the address of the financial institution in which you're dealing with, right below the name of the financial institution. Then it goes on to say, whereas I. See? Now look what it just stipulated, I. Now you know that a straw man can't be you, could it? Can't be. So it's a difference between whereas and then whereas I. Now you're talking about yourself, which is the living man. See? Then you'll put your name, you see, upper and lowercase. In some cases, some individuals like to use all lowercase. Either one is all right. Being a duly authorized representative of the United States government as a warranty contracting officer, have determined that retention and escrow of the following property is no longer required to ensure further performance of the said government contract or satisfaction of claims arising therefrom. Now, you see right here where it has them two colon. You know, you see where a colon is? Where there's a colon, what come after the colon must be explained by what came before it. See? So when you see the colon, it should bring to light all of this. So what do you put there? See what? See optional form 90, see standard form 28, see attachment, then you'll put the account number. Everything that you've seen and have done on 28 is what you're going to also do on this optional form here. Okay. Yeah. Yes, indeed. Yes, you can. Now, you're going to have to ask that again at the mic because that's important. Now, it goes on after that. After you put in all your documentation and see the attachments, because you know you can't put all that in this little bitty space. You have to say see attachments. Sometime I tell you this, like I told another individual, make sure that in some cases that you take the time with the attachments and put a number on it. Attachment 1, attachment 2. So when you say see attachment, you can put attachment 1, attachment A, B. It's up to you what way you want to name it. So they'll know exactly what attachments they're seeing. Okay? That goes along with the bonds. Now, it goes on to say, and whereas the surety remains liable to the U.S. government for the continued performance of the said government contract and satisfaction of claims pertaining thereto. Now, therefore, this agreement witnesses that the government hereby releases from escrow. You hear that? Now you see why individuals got up here and had their remedy? Because this form just telling them, it says, now therefore this agreement witnesses that the government hereby do what? Release from escrow the property listed above. And direct the custodian of the aforementioned escrow account to what? To deliver the listed property to who? To the surety. This is why individuals' accounts are being closed and they are getting their remedy. You see? If the listed property comprised the whole of the property placed in escrow in the aforementioned escrow account, the government further directs the custodian to close the account. You see that? And to return all property therein to the surety, along with any interest accruing which remains after the deductions of any fees lawfully owed to the financial institution. So, of course, they are escrow agent. They did their job. They did hold your money for about 15, 20 years. So you should at least pay them $500 or something for their job. if your mortgage payment just so happened to be somewhere in the vicinity of maybe 250K or maybe even a million, you see, not 100 million, just one. Don't you realize that they got to give you back that doubled? You see? And I could tell you something else if you really went in to them after it and looked at them 10 cars that they really took the currency from and went on there as such. Imagine that 10 times. But we don't try to get on them as such. We just want them, first of all, to just close the account and just go ahead on and just release the funds that's due to us. Just times one. Because on top of that, didn't it stipulate that you also even get the interest? See? Now, that should be enough. If they've been holding your money for 20 years to give you all that money back and the interest for that time and leave you alone. You got a house free and clear? I think that's good enough, isn't it? See? Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, come on up. Come on. Yeah, because yeah, they need to hear. They think I'm talking to myself. Yes.
This document notes to sign in blue.
Yes.
Would it hurt to sign in red, as he indicated?
Seal in red,
with
sign
a thumbprint, okay.
Yes.
All right.
Only because that's been working all along. We don't want to reinvent the wheel. Then they look at us and say, well, what's going on here? Now, let me tell you the power of signing in red, as Gene stipulated. Don't you know whenever you sign something in red, it can't be revoked? It makes everything legal and binding. You can't. Now imagine if you got a ticket. Speeding, and you just took a red ink pen and said, it's a wrap. Go pay it. You signed it in red. You can't change that. So signing in red makes it legal and binding. That's why we keep a blue ink pen so we won't make the mistake. I used to, that was a time, you see this hotel, you see all this carpet in here? This was what I would have done, this whole room by myself, maybe with a crew of two guys, and do this. And at the end of the day, I'd leave out and I'd make sure I had a red ink pen. And I'd give them the red ink pen, and I'd give them the contract, and they sign it. They cannot ever revoke that. I don't care what the contract said. If they sign it in red, it's a done deal. Remember that. That's why he was telling you to sign in red, because it makes it a done deal. But in some incidents, when you sign in red, you can make it a done deal for yourself. So that's why we have to be careful with the red, because you see what I'm saying? So just keep a blue ink pen on you at all times. If you're going to keep a red ink pen, keep it in the pocket that you want them to use. Okay? Now, in some documents, use the red, like Gene said, because it's the documents that you want to be done. Okay? Okay, now we'll take your questions, and then we'll go through this because we went through the 91, which is all you need, the 91 to 28, in most cases, to handle your mortgage. Okay, let's have some fun. Come on up and ask your questions.
Reverend Tony.
Yes, I hear you. Go ahead.
I want to share with you my case, and one of the questions I have is when it comes to the 28, I mean, not the 28, but the 91, what about where you never made a payment? So in my particular case, I came home from the military in May.
Mm-hmm.
Looked for a house, and I got a house in July. I got the land, and then they brought in the house and finished it there. I signed for the house in September. The first payment was due on November 1st.
Mm-hmm.
prior to that, that November 1st, it was due. November 3rd, I slapped him with a lawsuit. I slapped the mortgage because I found out that what they were doing to our homes. And mm-hmm. I said, based on the things I've been through for my country, mm-hmm. I said, there's no way in the world I'm going to give them another dime.
Mm-hmm.
And so to fast forward to a little bit now, in my particular case right now, the judge canceled my case, and I came in for a reconsideration. And in my reconsideration, I was not going to allow the judge to cancel my case again, so I had the judge recused.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, basically in my particular case, when I had the judge recused, the whole basis of my case was declaratory judgment. And the whole basis of the declaratory judgment was my unsecurity, my unsurety of that of the particular note.
Mm-hmm.
For the first thing that he did wrong to me in the first time around was, I'm the plaintiff in that case, and he took the counsel's word to be true, and he didn't look at any affidavits that I had on hand, and the fact that he denied me my due process of law.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the way I got him recused was I slapped him with the fact that I told him that I put notice to a judicial committee for a complaint. I also told him that he was taking money under the table because of how he defended so well in this part. But to bring it to the point of now, I'm waiting for another judge, and because they don't know which judge they want to try to give me at this point in time. I'm more concerned of when I'm putting these files, I want to be able to put these documents in because I know they're going to do what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, I just want to, you know, I've been given a number of different things, and I want to do this once and once only.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been told to put the 28 and 90 and 91, put it in the county recorder's office first. I said, hold up, I'm not doing that. I need to know because that's not the process from what I hear. You know, I want to go from what's evident, what's been done, and just keep repeating what's been done from before, not someone else's new concoctions or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I'm really at now, into knowing, one, how does it work with my case? Because I don't have no escrow account. I never gave them another dime when I found out that they took my, you know, mm-hmm. that, you know, they're basically using us as a slave, and I'm not going to be a slave for anyone anymore,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I wanted to know your take on my situation. What do you think?
Now, what I think you need to do is this. One, what's stipulated is that you created a loan, you created a debt, which you didn't create the debt because you never made a payment, which is good because you're in a position to do a 1099-A. See, after 30 days, you do a 1099-A under acquisition, and you acquire the goods. See, especially after 30 days of the mortgage. As you stipulated, you have no escrow, as it appears, simply because you haven't started putting into it. But nevertheless, guess what? They've already created and made the payments on the product, you see. They've already took the note, cashed it in.
Right.
Thereby, if that's the done thing that was taking place, what you need to do in your documentation is this. Before the next court appearance or whatever is going to happen, and before waiting for another judge, ask the mortgage company to produce the note, so that you may be able to verify signature.
Well, I asked all three different law firms to produce the note. Actually, I subpoenaed the note to the court case that day.
Now, what you're going to have to do when you ask them for the note, you're going to also, again, you heard Gene talk about the S3 report, prospectus, and so forth, and then go into the call report And after you pull the call report, you also want to do what? Call the comptroller of currency and get the comptroller of the district involved in the fraud that the bank has done. You see? Thereby, they will get involved in it, and then they will prove for you. You don't have to prove it for yourself. All you have to do is mention it. The comptrollers already know what's going on. That's why the banks are shutting down. Get them involved. They love to help. 10-1, the bank hasn't paid them nothing anyway. That's why they never investigated their books. It's a bookkeeping entry that the banks are supposed to pay the comptroller to come and investigate to make sure that the books is kept properly, but the banks never did. So comptrollers never visited the bank. That bank 10-1 is on that comptroller's list. And that's not a good thing. And that's the same thing in which you heard the other gentleman that was up, that was speaking, because at the other seminar I had told him to call the comptroller and so forth, pull the call reports and everything. He did. And you see what the comptroller did for him?
How do I go about pulling that call?
You can get the comptroller off of Wikipedia, go through Wikipedia, pull up the Federal Reserve Banks, and the Federal Reserve Banks will take you through comptrollers and all the Federal Reserve Banks. It'll take you through a whole lot of things. It'll show you the call reports, all that's on there. And you just click on that little blue thing that's stipulated, and it'll take you right where you need to go onto those particular websites. That's why I always use Wikipedia, because everything is already done by individuals like me and others who utilize it. And then we'll put some information on there to help other individuals along the way. Okay? So that way you won't have so much to look for when you go on there, because we try to put what we can on there to help others. Okay? So that's what you need to do, and that will take care of your case. Yours is real simple. Just go ahead on and have them to pull the note. They can't pull the note. Have them also to pull the call report, and then get the comptroller involved, and your case is done. You see, you're fine.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Pastor King.
Mm-hmm.
I know you got a lot of people here, so I'm going to rather be quickly here. On SF-28,
mm-hmm.
Line number 4,
mm-hmm.
I have a question there. If you already have original, and the original sold it to the current lender,
mm-hmm.
which is sold it to the trustee,
right,
which is also sold it with the attorneys, how many SF-28 do you need to do? Do you need to do 4?
No, you just need to find out where it is at that present time and deal exactly with that individual party. You follow? And that will take care of your situation. Because the purpose of them selling it, you see, they're just showing they fractalized your note. They done that off of each one of your Social Security cards. Remember, you had 10 cards, so it's no mystery that it started traveling around the globe. That's no mystery. But all you have to do is find out which particular bank is dealing with your account thus far and put the 28 upon them, and that will take care of the problem that you're going through.
Okay. All right. Thank you. The second thing is that this is actually my wife's loan,
mm-hmm.
But she doesn't know anything about that. I do.
Mm-hmm.
Do a lot more research in that. So can I put my BC into that 28?
No.
It has to be hers.
Correct.
So anything that we do here, 90, 91, 28,
mm-hmm.
all goes through.
You can be the power of attorney, but you cannot use her information in those particular boxes. But you could sign as the power of attorney over the matter.
Oh, okay. So I can do that without them
correct.
Ever looking at it. Okay.
Yes.
The third thing is that and the last one is that I'm going to add a couple people who are asking about, should I put like on 91 on I think that they're from, should I put it in National Currency Act of 1834, you know, C section 27, 28? You mentioned earlier that you only do 27 and then later on you do the 28.
Correct.
Should you put 28, section 27, section 28 and 53, or just
one at a time?
One at a time.
When you're dealing with those sections, yes, only one at a time.
Okay. And when do you bring back the 28 or the 53, section 53.
When you the 53 goes with the 27.
Okay.
And the 53 will also go with the 28, depending on which one you're going to utilize.
I see.
You always utilize the 53.
All right. Thank you, Tom.
Yes.
Thank you, Pastor King.
Yes.
Do you need to have your form 2890 or 91 notarized?
Yes.
The second part of the question is, I guess this, you answered it. Does an affidavit need to be notarized to be valid, or
correct,
can you use a great seal or a thumbprint in lieu of a notary?
Must be notarized.
It must be notarized.
Yes.
So even though that notary signature is below your signature, that's
mm-hmm.
okay.
Correct. Now, let me tell you another way of notarizing. Who know another notary position? You in the city. You can't find a notary nowhere. What do you do? That's right. Two signatures, two witnesses is just as strong as a notary. So you can stand before two witnesses and have them sign it. That's just like you just notarized documentation.
Okay, very good. Thank you. And lastly, if lawyers need a license to practice law, as Gene was saying,
mm-hmm.
Mr. Keating, when they claim we are practicing law without a license, what do we do? Do we try to stay in common law, or how do we combat that if they claim we're practicing law without a license?
Is you practicing law?
No.
Well, you're fine.
So just deny I'm practicing law?
You're not. No.
Okay.
That's correct.
Thank you.
How you doing?
Yes.
On the two mortgage, you mentioned two mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Say mortgage A, mortgage B.
Mm-hmm.
You... After you A for V each one individually?
Yes.
And then does, say, mortgage holder A have to know that you have a mortgage, you need to enter that paperwork to both parties of A and B, and A and
correct.
B and cross them over?
Yes.
Okay. And then you said, or when you give them the 72-hour after you A for V and you send in your next paperwork,
mm-hmm.
is that a separate attachment you need to add back? And listed under 70?
No, that's listed on the affidavits of individual surety.
Under number 7 or number 8?
Yes, under 7A, yes.
7A.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. All right, that's it. Thank you.
Hey, Johnny.
Yes.
Just a quick, if the court's in the process of hastening eviction, how can you make these forms... I mean, how can you authorize or give the court instructions so that you don't have to wait 30 or 60 days? At what point or where can you emphasize, do the forms act immediately upon submission into the court? They may take time to process, but are they supposed to stop any action? And if they don't, how can you emphasize and where can you put on the forms to tell the judge to
mm-hmm.
authorize this process or
right.
stop
so
this
quickly,
process?
Yeah.
What do you do and how do you expedite that? Because
now,
I think basically the courts try and rush the process of eviction knowing that you can possibly
mm-hmm.
stop it. So what do you do to trump them?
Now, what are you doing in that incident? Is you, remember what the individual stipulated? You're stipulating in there a 72-hour period, which makes the docs what? Legal and binding.
Uh-huh.
That's what the affidavit is for. Standard Form 28 is an affidavit, and on there, you choose to tell the individuals, you have such and such time to make this matter go away, or however you choose to say it. Then that's the amount of time you choose to give them. With an affidavit, anything you say is legal and binding. You could tell the judge you owe me the moon. If he don't rebut it, he owe you the moon. You see what I mean? He got 72 hours to say, no, I don't. Okay? So that affidavit makes things legal and binding. Put it on your documentation sometime. Watch how quickly you receive a response back, registered mail, the next day.
And you put that in 7A, I guess? You have 72 hours in box 7A.
Yes, in box 7A. Put that 72 hours on there. That could be one of the first things you stipulate to them before you start talking about your attachments.
Okay. Now, you may or may not, I'm sure you know a lot about admiralty, but Gene's the admiralty expert, so I could table this if you'd
mm-hmm.
like in the interest of time.
Mm-hmm.
Would
mm-hmm.
you prefer? We'll talk.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Okay. Thank
mm-hmm.
you.
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Two questions. The first is really easy. The property, our home, is in both my husband's and my name.
Mm-hmm.
So under the name on the top.
Yes, both names go in that box. Yes.
And then both BCs?
Yes.
Okay, I don't have a BC because I'm naturalized, so would my naturalization number go?
That's correct, yes.
So both names and both naturalization
BC. That's correct.
Okay, and then the second question, I talked to you yesterday, but I want to make sure. Because we're in foreclosure and we have a lawyer, then you suggested that we take it back and fire the lawyer.
Correct.
Then how do we contact the mortgage company in order to get the paperwork, or what do we do?
Okay, now that's simple. They give you an address to send all your documentation to. Also, the mortgage company that most individuals deal with have a, for the most part, an attorney that they're dealing with, and that attorney has an address. So you want to also send those documentations to him to let him know what's going on. Then you make sure you file those documentations to the CEO of the company that you're dealing with as well, okay, which would be that mortgage company. Send them registered mail. That way they have to sign for it. And if you don't want to send it registered, send a notary presentment. Then after that, if obviously you're going through foreclosure, so there's a case that's already open. File it in the case. And with you filing it in the case, it will get to every party in question. You would not have to really do too much work, even though a lot of people like to do a lot of travel movements so they can get things done quickly. Filing in the case does just that. Make sure that you appear in court and ask the simple question, can he produce the claim? If he stipulates, no, I can't produce the claim, then you ask the judge to dismiss the case simply because the prosecutor cannot produce a claim. Thereby, you see no one that is testifying against you, and the prosecutor can't testify against you. Please, first of all, bring forth the plaintiff that is testifying against me. Where is he? I see no accusers. You see? Prosecutor can't be the accuser, neither could that attorney be. See? So you need to ask simple questions like that. After you get to the fact that they can't produce the claim, then you go right to, where's my accuser at? You see, this person here is a third-party witness. Is not an eyewitness to the case. You see? All hearsay. That's right. So these are things that you'll start thinking about when you're standing before the judge. And the judge will look around and be like, yeah, where is he? We say, well, I'm here. Shouldn't he be here? Yes, he should. He's the one that's making the claim. Well, can he prove that there is a claim? Can you even have this attorney that's operating in such a capacity produce a claim that they're stipulating that I owe? No, he can't. They'll say, well, no, we can't. It's a charge. Well, then dismiss the case. Then the judge will turn around and tell him, I'm going to give you 30 days to bring forth a claim against this defendant. And if you can't, then I'll dismiss the case. Come back in 30 days, he will have no claim. You see? And some of them will come back with the claim. And you will say to the judge, you say, thank you. This individual just have broken the National Currency Act of 1863, Section 28, thereby stating that it's illegal for any officer acting under such a capacity to hold a note. And the penalty and the fine for that is double the cost and 15 years imprisonment, in which I'm willing to waive the imprisonment just to release my mortgage. And I'm also sometime willing to release also the currency or the double the fine that he used to choose to pay me and will have to pay me, and he can just pay me a portion of that.
So if when we get back, if the lawyer calls and says that...
Say, how you doing, lawyer? I don't recognize you. And you don't recognize me. And if you represent me in any way, shape, or form, you're fired.
But if he's already arranged for a mediator, do we not?
You're fired.
So don't go to the mediator.
You're fired. Okay. Three times is legal.
Okay.
That's how you do it. And the way you do that, you got to remember this. I know you got a soft voice, but I know somewhere in there is a lion ready to come out simply because of the things that they're doing to you. You know that it's there waiting. Fire him. And when you do that, remember that he is not acting in your behalf. He's sworn in by who?
The
the bar, the British Arbitration Registry. First of all, he's not even here. You see? You see?
Thank you.
So fire him. Have fun doing that. Yes. Go ahead.
Pastor Tony, in a non-judiciary state like California,
mm-hmm.
when they have a trustee in charge of all these things, how will be the fastest way to fire the trustee, reappoint a new one, and then, you know?
Send him an affidavit. Fastest way is through affidavits to do anything. Mm-hmm. Just tell him that you are fired 3 times. Write it on an affidavit. You're fired, you're fired, you're fired. I do not wish to have you represent me at all in any way, shape, or form, in no capacity. And if you have any response to the things that I'm saying, send it by way of affidavit within a 72-hour period, accompanied by $500. Ain't that what he charged you an hour?
Thank you very much.
I'm pretty sure he won't do that. Thereby, you will not get an affidavit from that individual.
Hi, Pastor King. Yes. Pat from Michigan. I'm happy you can answer these questions. I got a house I live in now, and I lost it in foreclosure in 2004,
mm-hmm.
and a friend refinanced it in his name.
Okay.
How do I go back and get the money from the mortgage that was paid off in 2004?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a 1099?
Let's go back and let's say that again. You have a house?
It went into foreclosure in 2004.
Okay.
It went to redemption time. Before the redemption time was up, he refinanced it, paid the first mortgage off in full, and put a mortgage on in his name, and I'm living in the house with my family.
Okay.
So how do I go back and get
it? Is there still a mortgage on it right now?
Yeah, he put a new one on.
Okay, good. Now, this is simple. You might not get the money back from 2004 because it's past the 3 years.
Okay.
But what you can do is get the money back right now. Because there's still a mortgage on that particular property. Only thing you have to do is go in there with a 28 and a 91. Close the escrow or the account. Now remember, you can go in there with the National Currency Act of Section 27 or Section 28, and you will receive double. So that will give you the money back from 2004, and it will give you the money back for now, because you're getting double the payment.
Can I file in my name?
Yeah.
Under my BC?
No, the individual that has the loan on that property.
Under his name.
Correct.
BC. Okay.
Yes.
Great.
Now, you can act as a POA for that individual and still get the same results done.
I can't get a POA and
mm-hmm.
work through it.
That's
okay.
Right. That's right.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Pastor Tony Armand here again. Thank you very much. Quick question. I have a receiver who appointed by court on mm-hmm. my income property, which I'm a developer.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do regarding the receiver? Receiver right now in possession, collecting rent and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. And what are they stipulating? They're trying to take the property? What?
Yeah, it's multi-unit. It went for it delinquent because I couldn't sell, market change.
Right,
so
right.
Foreclosure process start. They put the receiver, and right now they're in control.
Mm. They're in control of your property, and the foreclosure has not went all the way through yet.
It is in the process of foreclosure, but meantime they put a receiver because I had a couple of tenants, and that I assigned them like a 1 year lease, so hopefully I will hold them
mm-hmm.
until I learn hopefully all this.
Good. Now my question is this: is the receiver that's collecting the currency, is the currency that's being collected saving the property from going into foreclosure?
No, it's just a receiver there to
the money. Who gets the money?
Yeah, but as of now, they didn't collect money yet.
Who gets the money?
A receiver.
And who will he give it to?
To the bank, I'm assuming.
Okay, the bank gets the money. They fire the receiver.
Fire? How do I fire him?
Easy. You're fired. You're fired. You're fired. No. You'll get used to that one day. Now, let me show you what you do. In your case, you're still going to go through with the optional Form 91 and the 28. Why? Because you're still dealing with the foreclosure. It's a simple process. 28, 91, National Currency Act, Comptroller of Currency, and then usher in again. If you go to court, make sure you stand before the judge and go in there with the National Currency Act and bring in a call report and show them that there's a zero balance on the note, stipulating there is no note on the property. And also let the judge know that you've also asked all the time for the mortgage company to show you proof that there is a note, and he can't. There is no claim. There is none. No more coming up. Okay.
Last question, hopefully. I had a partner who is in dishonor because I was going through this process. He was supposed to give me money in order for me to keep the property.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't give me money. I put him on a title, and now he is just messing with my life. He changed the locks and made a lot of headaches for me. How do I take him out, or what do I do with him?
You put him on the title and you on there too?
Yeah, it is under my corporation because I developed the property. I put mm-hmm. him there because he was supposed to help me with the money, and he didn't do anything. Right now he's on a title with my corporation.
Mm-hmm.
Am I stuck?
Yeah, but he's still in there with it.
On the title only, yeah.
Yeah. And you want to do what to him?
Nothing. I'm just telling you. You're a brother. I have no problem. Just quit claim because you didn't do what you were supposed to do. I don't want any harm to you. But nevertheless, he made a lot of problem, and that's the reason they took me to jail.
Because of him?
Because of him. He sent his friend who came. So like, I'm a security guard. I said, I'm the owner of the property. I said, like, you are not the owner. I said, like, get out, 20 times. And then I got aggravated, nervous, and I said, I'm gonna break your neck. This, remember?
Oh, okay.
And they took
now
me to jail.
Why you? Oh, no wonder you wanted.
No, I'm not breaking nobody's neck. Yeah, right now I'm talking to myself, but everything in a court.
Now, what you have to do with that case? You got a horrible neck. I ain't never did this one before. I don't know. You got to ask somebody. Gene, what are you going to do?
I don't have any contract. Everything was verbal that he's going to help me, and he didn't do anything. I just
trust. Ain't no contract?
No, everything.
Okay.
But
well, yeah,
I put him on a title, nevertheless. How do I take him over the title?
Yeah.
How can I do that? But he has to sign, right? I mean,
no.
He doesn't.
He didn't sign to go on, did he?
Yeah, no. Okay. Oh, thank you to all you guys.
Now you know what to do. Then kick him out.
Yeah.
If you want to be nice, 3949A to the IRS.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
We're going to pray together, right? I don't know when. Today, tomorrow?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
We all going to pray tomorrow.
I'm all together.
Yeah, we need.
Okay. Nevada is a deed of trust state. I've got three mortgages with Countrywide. Trying to deal with the bank. Two of them are.
You know why? Because with Countrywide, there's something that we could probably do because Countrywide's bought over
Bank of America.
And thank goodness that talking with the individuals, I sound like a transformer right now, but that's okay. Here, you could work on that one. Now, sounding like that, I forgot what we were talking about.
Countrywide and Bank of America.
Okay, with the Bank of America, I'm talking with an individual in there. And we're going to be putting some things together that will be able to help individuals that deal with the Bank of America. So that will help a lot of individuals in this process.
Okay. So see you later.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Hi, I have about 6 mortgages with Countrywide.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Oh, well, you might not be in no ways harmed.
Okay, that's one.
Because they are willing to work with us.
Oh, okay, good. All right, that's one. Here's the thing. When you do these affidavits,
mm-hmm.
I know that it becomes a bond.
Right.
Okay, now, when it becomes a bond, like if you're sending out them to the different entities.
Correct.
The original goes to the mortgage company?
Mortgage company gets it.
Good. Now, so when you have the mortgage company, do you send it out to anybody else?
Clerk of courts, put one in the courts. They gets it also.
Anybody else? How many people?
No, just those two, really. It's the only two.
The mortgage company.
A lot of people do
the
risk management and all these people that's not even involved.
Okay.
And then they send it to GSA. And that's the reason GSA changed the forms. GSA got them forms. Like, what they sending this stuff to us for? And they say, well, since they're sending us this and we don't want the courts to be getting mad at us, lower the time period so it can lower the work of the people. So they took 3 hours away and gave us 25 minutes. So don't send nothing else to GSA.
Okay.
It says send it to them if you need any type of...
So only to the mortgage company and the clerk of the court.
That's all you need.
Nothing, nobody else. So the copies that you send out to other people, do you make copyright copies of it on the bond?
That's right.
So the mortgage company get original, the clerk of the court get one
original.
Original also?
All originals. Remember that. Never, ever a copy is acceptable.
No, I mean, like, if you write and make an original or write a word, copy across it, no.
Oh, okay, yeah, you could do that, yeah. Yeah, original copy.
You have the original document. You like, you print off two off the computer, get them signed or whatever.
And then on the top, write original copy.
Original copy.
There you go. That's right.
Original copy. Okay, I think I did 2728. Okay, I think I got it. Copy is written to me. Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Pastor Tony King, can we file these with the UCC-1 to the State Secretary?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, individuals that have the UCCs done, I mean, you got to look at this. They are some powerful things in the UCC. Everyone just have to know how to utilize the UCC. Individuals have taken the UCC and you still drive around with driver's license. They put the driver's license on the UCC, you see? And then if they ever want to go out and make some money, they go out and they speed. Simply because they leaned their UCC and they leaned their license, guess who get paid first when they go to court? The one with the first lien on the particular doc gets the first pay.
Wow.
So whenever there's a lien filed against it, who gets paid?
You.
The judges and the courts don't like that good.
Okay, got
it. So if you know how to utilize a UCC, then it's a good tool.
I got one question here. What forms and procedures does we use to stop the eviction notice from court order, especially when realtor is offering the homeowner cash and keys? We got a whole plenty of that happening. So, I mean,
if they're offering again,
cash and keys, cash for the keys of the houses.
To get out of the house.
Yeah, to get out of the house.
So they gonna pay you to leave?
Yeah.
Only $1,000?
Yeah.
What I would do in that incident, I'd go find a bunch of squatters, go move them into a whole bunch of empty houses, and tell them to go in and collect some currency. No, what you do, you don't fall for that. You just go ahead on through with your process, do your 28 and your 91, and then get that over with. Don't hesitate and play around with them.
Okay. One last question. How can I seal a felony record?
You can't talk about that right now. That's the next class.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
All right, just this one last question. This takes off where she left off here.
Okay.
You had said two places to send this, the mortgage company and the clerk of the court.
Yes.
But if you're not yet involved with the courts, do you record it in the county instead?
Sometimes the county doesn't record it. We're going to reenact this tomorrow and you'll see. Sometimes you can go to the county recorder's office and they, we're not filing that unless you file it over here. So you file it into the clerk of the courts and then you can always backtrack. Now, I did leave out this in which you'll come to find out that in some places like California and abroad, they are not under the 13 colony, so they just kick you out the house.
Mm.
After they list you in the paper. So what do you do in that regard, because you don't have a clerk of courts to file it in? You list it in the paper first. List it under the legal news. Now you have made it legal and binding. Now you can file it in the clerk of the courts because you have legal documents. You see how it's done?
Mm-hmm.
So in some cases, you do a little bit more than you do in other cases. But for the most part, try to do not as much as possible, but really as less as possible, and keep it as powerful as possible, and it still gets the job done.
Okay. Let me just make mention of something I've done just to take off of what he did.
Yes.
When I had a realtor submit me that letter,
mm-hmm.
I gave her a cease and desist, told her she's a neutral third party, she's involved.
That's right.
That's what I did.
That was good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the session's over. Hope you got a lot out of it. I sure did, and I always will. Remember 2891. Thank you very much.